Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, but it's a special edition of Rewind because I want to welcome a special guest. Joanne Anton is the director of Governor Tony Evers' transition team. Joanne, thanks so much for stopping by for
great
a few
to
minutes.
Be here.
Well, I get the first question, right,
right
J.R.?
Yes.
How is generally the transition going? And on January 7, are you going to have all your cabinet appointments? And are you going to have the transportation funding plan that was mentioned? So kind of can you update us with that?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me here. And to your first question, how's it going? It's going great. It's a lot of fun. It's moving fast. So to your second question, are we going to have everything done? We're going to do our very best. Our mantra over at the transition office is, let's not let perfect be the enemy of good. Let's just get going every single day, accomplish good things on behalf of the people of Wisconsin, and let's get to this new administration. So we're working at it every single day, and I would say every single night, deep into the night.
Well, J.R. and I trade off. Your turn.
Well, I guess I want to ask you about the process of building the team, because, you know, some people like Governor Walker kind of had a ready-made administration from Milwaukee County. Jim Doyle had people from DOJ. DPI is a different animal than those two things. So people that I talk to don't expect Tony Evers to have, like, these kind of people already in mind walking the door. So when we build the team, do you kind of focus on getting the cabinet secretaries and having them fill out the spots? Because if I got my math right, you have 270 jobs to fill in the new administration. So how do you approach building a team?
So it's a great question. You're looking for the best talent, first of all. But I would say before you're even looking for the best talent, you're thinking about how you want to include many voices, many opinions, so that you have the right recruitment strategy. And we've been working on that. You start with the cabinet secretaries, and you work your way down, and you work your way across. So you have to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time, and that's what we're doing. DPI has a wealth of talent, but so does the private sector. And there are lots of people here in Madison that have prior experience in both the Walker administration and the Doyle administration and past administrations. So we're interested in talent from all vantage points and from all sectors. And so we're getting a wonderful response. That's what's probably been most gratifying.
Well, that's where I wanted to go. You put up a website, and basically you said if you'd like to be considered for a job in the Evers administration, contact us, submit resumes. What's been the response, Joanne?
I have to say, on behalf of Governor-elect Evers and Lieutenant Governor-elect Mandela Barnes, it has been gratifying to see just the response in general, but especially people who are dedicated to public service and interested in problem solving for this administration. It's been remarkable. So and I have to tell you, we had to put up a website in almost less than 48 hours. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that we were able to get that done and it works and people have been able to process and get through and we've been receiving that information, it's been spectacular. So we have a couple thousand, maybe it's ticking up even more today. We continue to get interest in applications each and every day for all levels of positions.
Quick follow-up. So if someone is one of the 2,000 that contacted you, perhaps submitted her or his resume, and they haven't heard anything, should they do any follow-up? Is that a bad sign? What should they do if 3 weeks ago they submitted a resume and they've been out there like this waiting?
Yeah, so that's a question for just the general job market, right?
Yep.
So I will not profess to be in charge of all HR everywhere, but I can tell you the following. It is not a bad sign. It is just a function of volume and prioritization and time management. And so we have been tickling the wire, letting people know, don't worry, we're hang in there, we have your materials, and we're getting through the priority positions, and then, of course, we're pedaling fast to review all the interest, just to make sure. I would say the one thing about this administration, especially Governor-elect Evers, he knows how to take care of constituent service, and he knows how to respond to people, and so it's a huge priority for us that people don't get lost or feel like there's not a well-organized machine going on. So we're doing our best to make sure that people are hearing from us And of course, we're trying to interview, and we're trying to vet, and we're trying to get people to fall into place. So there's a lot happening all at the same time.
Back to the process of building, do you want to pick every person those 270 jobs, or are you looking at picking your cabinet secretaries and giving him or her a pool of people to look at for deputy, the spokesperson for the agency? Legal. I mean, how do you go about that? Is it you guys trying to find all 270, or is it trying to find, here are the people we want to lead these agencies, now you guys pick from these pools to fill these jobs?
Yeah, so we have a transition office that has to do a lot of things in less than 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. So we have to pick personnel. We have to work on policy. We have to get a new administration sworn in. So it's a lot of stuff happening all at the same time. So to the extent that we can put the pool together, make some decisions, transition to the next pool of people or to the next group of people who are permanently going to be there to help fill that out, there is no date specific that by January 7th the entire government has to be hired and reporting for duty on that day. That, of course, is the perfect, and we're aiming for perfect, but we're gonna work to be really, really good at it. So do we let the cabinet make those decisions? Do we want to make those decisions? Both. We have lots of considerations to make, and in some places there's a very clear direction, and in other places we want to be we want to take our time, be more thoughtful, and work with people as they're coming into the administration. And you're going to see in the coming weeks those things are going to start to fall into place.
Did the lame duck controversy slow down the transition process because perhaps you didn't see it coming and it took X amount of energy and resources? Did the lame duck process slow the transition process?
I would not say it slowed the transition process. I would say the following. It's unfortunate that the Republican legislature found it in their timing to try to undermine and override the will of the people that was so clearly demonstrated on Election Day. It didn't distract us one bit. We are very focused on the things that we have to be focused on. We're focused on recruiting talented public servants who are dedicated to listening. We're focused on including as many people as possible from everywhere in the state in our policy discussions. That's why the team has headed out on these budget listening sessions on tour throughout the state. And we have to focus on making sure we have a spectacular inaugural that takes place on January 7th and that people are ready to go. That's what we're focused on. So it didn't slow us down. It's just unfortunate.
A quick follow-up. Is anybody on the transition team pursuing potential lawsuits in the wake of the lame duck legislation that the governor's indicated he's going to sign at noon today? Is that on your screen?
I think it's on everyone's screen, and I think as I'll only echo what Governor-elect Evers has said, everything's on the table.
Okay. So in this transition process, Governor-elect Evers has been critical of the process with the storm session bills, kind of critical of Kimberly-Clark, but hasn't taken a strong position on, like, with the Kimberly-Clark bill, had said what he would have done. Is there a responsibility for him as the incoming governor to take more detailed positions on things like Kimberly-Clark or on transportation or these other issues before lawmakers right now?
Well, I think it's a responsibility he takes very seriously, and he's engaged in lots of conversations. Now, whether or not those are public conversations or private conversations, there's a lot that's happening both where you guys are covering it, and there's a lot going into our conversations around what this new budget cycle and as well as what's happening just in the lame duck legislation. So he takes that responsibility very seriously, and he is formulating his plans for when he takes office. So we're in that limbo period right now.
But like with Kimberly-Clark, so he was critical of the process and that Republicans had left people in the dark, but I didn't get the sense from his statement that he was really saying he would have signed this deal or he would have done this deal. Would Governor-elect Evers have done this deal on January 8th if he had had the opportunity to do up to $28 million over 5 years to save those jobs?
I think right now what's been before us is the real issue of where the authority for economic development lies. And that right now has been threatened. That right now has been questioned. And I think Governor-elect Evers has been very clear that he is the chief economic development officer. The governor needs to be the chief economic development officer for the state. So, of course, that would be his responsibility and his consideration. And yesterday was news that Kimberly-Clark deal got signed. Mm-hmm. So,
An update on the process. Is Governor-elect Evers yet at the point where he is interviewing potential cabinet secretaries? Has that started? Can you talk
sure,
about that?
Sure, yes. Yes, we are conducting interviews. We are conducting... we are still recruiting. So, yes, everything's happening at the same time.
Do you senior members of the transition team vet potential cabinet secretaries and then forward to the governor two or three or four candidates?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And how far are we away from some of your major cabinet secretaries like DOA, Corrections, DOT, Health, and I? The insurance commissioner is going to be important in this debate over health care.
Sure.
So how far are we away from some appointments?
Give me the next 3 weeks. That's three what we got.
Well, there's the Capitol Press Corps was chasing rumors yesterday that there's a DOA secretary. Is there?
We will be letting you guys know as soon as the decisions are final, and we will announce them, and you'll be the first to know. How about second to know?
I was going to say maybe third or fourth. Well, as I've covered transitions, if you're on the transition team, your name obviously becomes, well, we'll let that person end up in the administration. So are you going to go to the administration or Aaron Olver?
Aaron and I are hearty volunteers, and we are really honored to be in the roles we're in, and we're taking our volunteer role very seriously.
So. Does that mean you're going back to Herb Cole world after this is over?
I am definitely going back to Herb Cole world. Definitely.
What about Aaron?
Aaron's intentions are to go back to his job. Yeah, absolutely. So he's a real talent, though. I wouldn't. If I could hire him, I would.
I'm going to come back to a question earlier. Before the November 6th, the governor said he hoped to have a transportation highway funding plan announced on Inauguration Day. Nobody on the transition team has a lot of expertise in highway funding and transportation. Is it still your goal to have a highway funding plan on January 7th when he raises his right hand?
I have to get back to you on that. We've got so much on our plate right now, and there are a lot of hopes for that first week, and there's a lot of work pedaling fast to get us there. This is an administration that's working on a lot of things at the same time, economic development, transportation. That's what these councils are for, really, as well, to help us get as much input as possible going into starting off on the right foot, both on that first day, but also those first 100 days, too.
Yeah. Each administration that I've covered in the transition, the budget is the first big test, the big test. And more often than not, that budget is delayed until a few weeks at least, because traditionally we see it mid-February, but you have a very small window to get it done. So are you guys expecting to ask for a delay of the budget being introduced beyond the normal mid-February mark at this point?
It's possible. Nothing's been decided. And of course, you know, again, perfect not being the enemy of good. We're working to get as much put together as we possibly can. But knowing that there is the potential for, a slightly later date, that's possible. So we're considering it.
You had, the transition team announced an economic development advisory council, and the Republican Party put out a release. 25 of the 30 are from either Dane or Milwaukee counties. Do you want to respond to that, saying you're slighting the rest of the state? Do you want to respond?
I will, yes, because it's not the absolute. That group is not the only group of people that we're listening to or we're consulting with. It just, you know, we use up a lot of paper if we put everybody's name, and then it starts to lose its ability to be taken seriously as a council. So we have our advisory councils that have been named, but we also have these long lists of people who said, you don't need to put me on your advisory list, but absolutely, I want to come in, I want to talk, or here's my white paper. And so we have countless
yes, you do.
Advisors who are beyond those named entities, and they come truly from every corner of the state.
You have 30 on your criminal justice list. It's just a very high number.
Yes. Well, and we would have wanted to contain it, but we didn't want to limit it. And so, and on that particular issue, it's a major priority for the governor and lieutenant governor, and for our state to find ways and explore innovations that will bring us to better justice and better reforms, so and better public safety. So that's why we let that one go a little bit larger. And then the interest on that has swelled from all corners of the state. I mean, there's a real diversity of interest in that particular issue.
I think we have time for one more question, JR.
My research going back, Governor Doyle had his first cabinet pick in place December 5th, a few more the next week, The last one, though, took until May of 2003. Governor-elect Walker had everybody out December 30th. With you guys, I've been asking around, and I've heard the word diversity a lot, that you guys are looking for a truly diverse cabinet. So my questions are, what does that mean to you, diversity? And two, is that maybe slowing things down to find the right mix of people to truly have this, meet this goal of diversity in the Evers administration?
It's a great question, and I appreciate that you are calling out our attention to diversity, because it is critically important, and it's been a priority from day one. Diversity means many different things, so we're not limiting it to mean demographic, racial diversity, or gender diversity. We want it to be those things. We want it to be geographic diversity. We want it to be professional experience and life experience diversity. And so those are a lot of factors to find the right person at the right moment in their life, in the right geographic space, able to come and report for duty in Madison. So while that, all those things may take just a little bit longer, it is well worth the effort, because it is a priority to focus on diversity of all experiences.
My final question deals with a specific individual. You have three former corrections secretaries on your Criminal Justice Advisory Council. One of them is Mr. Reynish, now running the Colorado system of prisons. Would he be a pretty good candidate for the Wisconsin Department of Corrections?
I'm not sure he's put himself in the running.
Really?
So I know he served in the. I know he has served in the role.
Yes, both in Wisconsin, now Colorado, former Dane County Sheriff.
Right, and he's certainly participating in that advisory council.
Okay.
So,
any other names you want to float?
Not right now.
Okay, Joanne Anton, Director of Governor-elect Evers Transition Team. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll give you a chance to head out as we look through WIS I Was There. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Wisconsin, I Was There. Very interesting segment. Senate President Roth talks about the KC deal. I ask Madison Police Chief Mike Koval about cameras. Mike LaCrone, I asked him, do you like hip-hop music as he retires? I interviewed Senator Caleb Frostman, the shortest-serving senator in Wisconsin history. Suicide rates. Tragically, Native Americans lead. Governor-elect Evers, the Governor Walker should veto the entire lame-duck package. And finally, a review of Wisconsin's first hemp growing season since the 1950s. Wish I Was There.
We are recognizing and celebrating here today isn't a triumph of any one individual, but rather a triumph of many individuals. Growing up in this community, you'd be hard-pressed to find a more recognizable and more iconic company than Kimberly-Clark, so vital here to our community. I just want to thank the company. I know they do have to make, as Colin mentioned, you know, strategic decisions at that high level, but I want to thank them for their continued commitment and investment right here in Northeast Wisconsin.
I understand that in communities that have suffered, as we have, a tragic outcome, that the camera in and of itself represents a first offering, a first hope, or an encouragement that cops who are engaging in unlawful actions might be held more accountable. And yet, I've also seen studies that have been fairly widely disseminated that even when cops have these cameras on, it doesn't show a depreciable difference in the use of recordable force.
Your reaction to hip-hop as music?
I like it when it's inventive. They try to sometimes use shock value as opposed to creativity, and that's when it starts to bother me.
We're in a building where people tend to take themselves very seriously. You don't seem to be taking yourself too seriously as you exit the Senate. Why?
I try to be my authentic self. I've in different times in my life, you know, kind of been forced to be less than my authentic self. In the corporate world, I was in banking for 9 years, and so you suit up and show up and kind of exist in a stuffy environment, and that was suffocating to me. And I'm not going to change who I am to try to appease people. I'm going to, like I said, be nice about it, be civil, but I'm certainly not going to you know, act in a way that's not in accordance with my personal constitution. And a lot of times that means being a little goofy, and that seems to work out okay for me.
The highest percentage of suicides by age group occurred among those who are ages 40 to 49. In terms of race of suicide decedents, the largest percentage of those who died by suicide in Wisconsin during this time period were male, white, and non-Hispanic. However, if we look at this information in terms of suicide rates by race, we actually see that American Indians in Wisconsin have the highest suicide rate.
Governor Walker has indicated he might be open to some partial vetoes in some of that lame dog legislation. If he had to pick one thing that you would hope that got changed or partially vetoed out of that big package?
Yeah.
What would you hope most?
I'm going to disappoint you in this answer. There's 141 pages of that hot mess. All of it needs to be vetoed.
End of the first growing season and since the 1950s, overall?
A lot of the headlines that I've read have called it trial and error, and I would say that's pretty accurate.
I would say any farmer that you talk to, weather by far was the biggest factor to growing this crop. And we had a tremendous amount of wet weather, mm-hmm. Which is something this crop is not totally keen on. It's more of a dry weather type crop. It likes to be watered, but not overly saturated. And we, unfortunately, this year were extremely wet and caused some issues because of that.
Save their jobs. 340 in Arkansas.
Yesterday, Governor Walker went to Nina and announced a deal that will save 388 jobs at that Cold Spring plant. And let's just go through the terms of that. WEDI can award Kimberly Clark up to $28 million in income tax credits over 5 years. To get those breaks, Kimberly Clark must retain all 388 Cold Spring plant employees through 2023 and invest $200 million in the plant. There's also Kimberly Clark can earn tax credits for purchases from Wisconsin companies. J.R., the Kimberly Clark package was the subject of the extraordinary session, and mm-hmm. which there was never a vote cast on that. So how can the governor do this deal with an agency and a private company when it's been the subject of legislation debated for 8 months?
Well, there are a couple things, remember. One, WEDIC has an option to use enterprise zones to provide cash credits to companies. Currently, there's a cap of 30. And last check update I got from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, we're at 26, so they had room to create a new one. Also, part of this deal is the investment, the capital investment from Kimberly Clark. That seems to have opened a new door to do more than what they were going to do before, or could have done before. Another thing that wasn't in the release yesterday, but I heard about, is that in addition to the numbers at the Cold Spring plant, Kimberly Clark must maintain its current payroll statewide in Wisconsin to qualify for these credits.
That's in the fine print of this deal.
So it looks like everybody got a little bit less than what they were looking for in the old deal, right? It was going to be 15 years in the previous one. Now it's 5. Mm-hmm. It was up to, remember, for two plants, $115 million maximum over that 15 years. Now we're talking 28. So everybody's a little bit less. But what's noteworthy here, too, is that, you know, here we are saving the state, saving these jobs at Cold Spring. And the same day that happens, Kimberly Clark announces the Arkansas plant will close by 2021, where 340-some jobs will go away. This shows you the competition between and among states for jobs like this.
Yeah.
And here we are with the way our taxes are structured in Wisconsin. These are essentially going to be cash payments to the company. We are, as a state, subsidizing Kimberly Clark payroll to keep these jobs here. That is the kind of level of competition you're talking about. Now, depending on who you talk to, this is either saving jobs or corporate welfare and abuse of taxpayer dollars. But the bottom line is that Walker went in and said, we have to get this done, and they got it done.
They got it done. Well, and that's a wonderful segue. Let's listen to less than a minute of Governor Walker as he announced this package using the term centerpiece. Great way to end his word, legacy. Let's listen to the governor.
This company, Kimberly Clark, is putting a stake in the ground saying we're looking to expand our operations, we're investing in our technology, we're doing things that are going to make us excel, and you're the team to make that happen. And then finally saying we're sharing that not just with the employees here, we're sharing that growth and optimism with all over 200 other suppliers and all the people who work for those companies all across the state of Wisconsin and all the families that will benefit from that. So, yeah, this is a pretty good Christmas going forward because we didn't just save your jobs for the short term. This is about a long-term commitment to this company, to this community, and to the state. And I couldn't be more proud to be a part of it. To me, if there was any talk about a legacy, I want this to be my legacy.
At noon today in Green Bay, the governor is going to, you and I can pretty much agree, he's going to tweak with some vetoes this lame duck package, but he's going to sign them. And he signaled that when that statement earlier in the week, I'll just read some segments of it. The new governor will still have some of the strongest powers of any governor in the nation. He will have the power to veto legislation, broadest line item veto authority, able to appoint members of his cabinet and various other state government posts. Well, the lame duck bills never took that away anyway. able to sign off on administrative rules, present a biennial budget, able to pardon convicted felons. None of these things will change regardless of what I do with the bills passed in the state legislature next session. You've been working this all week. What's he going to do here in a few minutes in Green Bay?
My guess is not much. So he singled out stuff with the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation that he went change that language a little bit. So yeah. I'd watch that when the announcement comes out. But honestly, not much. I mean, Walker, don't forget, Walker negotiated this, at least his administration did, mm-hmm. with Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald. So his staff was involved in the discussions about these bills from at least for a few weeks. So I think he was surprised by anything. It's a matter of whether what the final language looks like goes farther than he wants it to. Then I think he might step in.
So he just did the deal with Weedick with Kimberly Clark. So you look for him to accept the changes that raise the number of board appointments from the ledge and diminish the number from the gov?
That's a big question. What do we do with Weedick? Because remember, with what happened yesterday, actually Wednesday I think Weedick reached the deal or signed the deal with Kimberly Clark. They created a new enterprise zone without legislative approval. Under the extraordinary session bills, that couldn't happen anymore. Yeah, you'd have to submit that enterprise zone to the Joint Finance Committee for a 14-day passive review, which means they have 14 days to object, and if they don't, it's okay. If they do, you have to have a hearing and then a vote. But this wouldn't happen under that, so will he change that piece? That's what I'm kind of watching.
And we're also watching whether he stays in place this Solomon-like deal where he doesn't get control of the CEO of Weedick until September 1. We'll see what happens to that. Okay, let's go to your stock picks, sir.
So assembly committees, so look, everybody wants a gavel when you're in the legislature because it gives you all kinds of things like additional staff.
Yep.
Also, if you're a cynic, it gives you a way to keep the lobbyists, make sure that you're kept in mind when it comes time for campaign donations. But this week, Robin Voss announced he's going from 38 standalone committees to 41. Every member of his caucus who is a returning member is either going to be a chairman, be in leadership, be on finance, or be on the building commission in the next session.
Yep.
That means happy members.
It does. It really does. Good point. Mixed.
So Scott Walker, so the governor talked about Kimberly Clark, he wants to be his legacy. Let's be honest, his legacy is going to be Foxconn. Good or bad, that's going to be the centerpiece job creation effort in Walker's term that'll be remembered when he's long gone. Now, backers will also talk about the job growth under Walker, all these companies coming here, detractors talk about the job growth rate, where we've continually lagged behind the rest of the country. But that's really where Walker's at. I mean, it's going to take years to determine what was Walker's impact financially on Wisconsin. Now, you cannot take away from him that when you talk about the most influential governors in Wisconsin history, mm-hmm. you'll have to talk about Bob La Follette, Tommy Thompson, and Scott Walker. Whether you like or dislike Scott Walker, the Act 10 fight, the way he molded Wisconsin in a more conservative direction, you cannot disagree that that's part of his legacy. With the extraordinary session bills, as much as Democrats want to say they take away from it or they could tarnish it, I don't know what he's going to be remembered for. I mean, what do you think about Scott Walker? 10 years from now, I'll think about Act 10, Foxconn.
Concealed carry, Foxconn.
Yeah. Those are the things we're going to remember
right
about.
To work, sign that, prevailing wage.
Absolutely.
I made a list of dozens of some of the changes that they've passed. Still no word on where Mr. Walker will be working on January 8th?
No, and to be honest with you, it could take us years to figure out was Foxconn worth it.
Mm,
the centerpiece of what he did, it could take years.
Okay, falling.
The chancellor's at Whitewater Lacrosse. So look, you do it okay if you're a chancellor at your University of Wisconsin.
Okay, you do better than that. The chancellor at Lacrosse's wage is $220,000 a year. That's a living wage. The chancellor at Whitewater, her wage is $238,000. Both living wages, excuse me.
But all of them, but a couple, got pay raises this week, or this past week.
Rebecca Blank at Madison, $73,000. I keep interrupting you, but...
Now, the university says, look, these guys are underpaid compared to their peers, so these big boosts were needed. I think it was like 6% was the smallest. Now, there are 13 chancellors. One didn't get anything because she got a boost earlier because there was competition for her.
Yeah, you're talking about the chancellor at Platteville. He got $50,000 because he had another job mm-hmm. offer. That's why he was passed up in the latest round.
These two, it's really punishment. With Lacrosse, this guy's been in some hot water. He brought in a porn star to give a lecture on campus, and Ray Cross, the president, was not very happy about that. The Whitewater chancellor, her husband has been accused of several sexual harassment allegations.
Yes.
So they're being viewed as punishment for what's bringing embarrassment to the university in recent months.
Yeah, and I think the chancellor at Lacrosse is the longest serving chancellor in the system. Okay, we're out of time. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for December 1-4.
Rewind, Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.